This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Bridesmaids. Dun, 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 dun. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you can pass on this one and we will see you next time. Are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one singular March's Going to the Dogs movie in the month of March. Today we are doing Bridesmaids. A super dog-heavy movie. We might as well be watching Beethoven or Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Bite me, Corinne. I know I cheated on this. I am well aware. And I am proud of it. Proud, I tell you.
I am here with the fabulous person who has brought Melody the paw dog into our life, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with somebody who I am not ashamed to say would most definitely be my maid of honor if I ever got married, Corinne Edding.
Thank you. Same. You would be too.
Okay, better say that.
And now that you killed off my sister, you don't have to share with her, so it's all good.
That's why I was like shooting you daggers, like, right, Corinne? You would be my maid of honor, right? Right? Is there anything you want to say? Anything you'd like to add to that?
That you would be mine too. You would be mine too.
That's right. That's yes. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Yes. Yes, Corinne, yes. You got to stop saying that about me killing off Patricia. They're going to start believing it. Jesus Christ. They're going to be like, I need to go back like 17 or 18 episodes to find out what really happened. How did they pull through that? Gee, that would really like stress out a friendship just like this movie. Oh,
our friendship is through the thick and thin. This movie causes me great anxiety, and I think we're going to have to do like regular anxiety check-ins throughout. Like, Corinne, how's it going over there? If I bring down like a paper bag and I start like breathing heavy into it, you know why?
I know. I was thinking about that. I'm like, well, you know, I like a high stakes movie. Ooh. And this is one of my absolute favorites. And there is a teeny tiny dog section towards almost the end. And I'm like, there's dogs in it. It counts. It's March is going to the dogs. It totally counts. And Corinne's like, you know, it's going to be a bear to write. And I'm like, I don't care. It's going to be fine. It's not going to take me 4.5 days to do. It's great.
As she like informs me over the weekend, as she's like rocking in the corner, I'm still not done with the outline.
I'll have it to you at least 10 minutes before we start, I swear. Enough time for you to read through it and then we'll go.
Oh, thank you. That was very kind of you. I tell you, I would never choose this movie, and I was so glad that you scripted it out and I could just like cruise on through reading it and then occasional parts go, la, 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 I can't hear you. So.
Oh, so you enjoyed it is what you're saying.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So much fun.
Okay. If we are talking about, there's Lillian and there's Annie. Mm-hmm. Lillian is the bride. Annie is the maid of honor.
Yes.
Would you say you're more of a Lillian or an Annie?
I am sad to say, very sad to say, that I am a Megan. Played by Melissa McCarthy. When I first saw this movie, which is the only time I'd seen this movie until I had to rewatch it again because you chose it. But when I first saw this movie, I was like, I cannot stand the Megan character. And then I was watching this stinking movie and I was like, oh my fucking God, I am like the fucking Megan character. What the fucking hell?
Oh my God. I was telling Larry that. I'm like, he was saying something about his boss at work. And I was like, you know what that saying that you hate in others what you hate in yourself the most? Uh-huh. He's like, yes. So it just kind of makes sense that Megan was a little off-putting. And then you're like, wait, am I looking in a mirror?
Yeah, seriously. What about you, Tam? Who would you say you're more like?
Oh, I would love to be like a Lillian, but I'm sure I'm not. I think I'm a good mix of Lillian and Annie, because although I like to be cool, calm, and collected like Lillian, I have spurts and freakouts like Annie quite frequently, and then just can't seem to stop them. You see the train coming, and you don't step out of the way, And then it hits you and you're like, God, that sucks. I should never do that again. Oh, here's another train. Oh, coming from the other direction. And the same thing happens.
I will say that I have been in self-imposed, horrible friendship situations, much like Annie. Through my actions, I have alienated friends. And so this movie is also painful on that level for me as well. So, you know, it's all good. But like, I would say that neither of us are the faux bestie Helen played by Rose Byrne.
Oh, Helen. Well, let's stop analyzing all the characters and share them with our gentle listeners.
Oh,
Corinne.
Yes.
Do this damn thing. And by this damn thing, I mean synopsis. Whoop, whoop. That's what I wrote at the beginning of the outline.
Thank you for that reminder. It caused me to actually remember after I had forgotten and then remembered and then forgotten. But I read your thing and then it made me remember later where I was like, oh, yeah, I need to do this damn thing.
So maybe I have to write the Corinne do this damn thing. And by damn thing, I mean synopsis at the top and then 2/3 down and then half the way down. And then at the ending, when you finish with your notes and you can be like, oh, shit, I got to do this synopsis. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Scroll back to the top.
Synopsis. Annie, played by Kristen Wiig, is in her late 30s and jaded. She doesn't believe in romantic love, her dream job failed during the economic downturn, and the only person she can count on is her bestie, Lillian, played by Maya Rudolph. At least she thought she could count on her bestie until a series of events unfolds, all started by Lillian's engagement and the dynamics of being the maid of honor, while bridesmaid and bestie one-upper Helen, played by Rose Byrne, threatens to come between Annie and Lillian's friendship. Or is it Annie who is the one standing in her own way?
Oh.
Find out by keeping those listening ears listening and joining us on the odyssey of anxiety, disaster, despair, friendship, and love that is Bridesmaids.
Dun dun da da, dun dun da da, dun dun dun
da. Tamara, are you ready to start us on our walk down the aisle?
I am. Anxiety check in one. Corinne, how are you doing?
Great.
You look like you're at about a 2. Yeah, already.
I'm at a 2. I'm ready to roll. I'm excited. Right. I'm hyped. Yeah.
Okay. We open with the exterior of a very nice house. We hear Annie, played by Kristen Wiig's voice, saying she's so glad he invited her over, while Ted, played by John Hamm, says she's glad she was available. Oh. Then we cut to Annie getting unceremoniously screwed by Ted in what is obviously a booty call. We see them hitting different positions from the back, from the front, from the side. She's trying to slow things down and enjoy herself, but Ted just wants to ram her and is not taking her needs into consideration.
Anxiety at a 6. Anxiety at a 6 already.
Deep breaths, girl. Deep breaths. They are on different rhythms, but she's a good sport because she likes him, and he's so hot. The next day, she's in Ted's bathroom, freshening up her hair and makeup. She carefully crawls back into bed with him because he's still sleeping, and she clears her throat, which wakes him. Oh, I'm so sad. I just had a bad dream. He looks at her, strokes her boob, tells her she looks beautiful, then follows it up with, you spent the night. Didn't we have a rule against that?
Asshole.
She looks a little floored and he says, I'm just kidding. Not kidding. Unprovoked, he adds, I'm going to be really busy the next few days and I don't want to make any promises I can't keep. And he assures him that she's easy breezy, not like other girls trying to rope it into a relationship. And she really wants to. Winky, winky. They kiss passionately, and when they pull apart, he says, I really want you to leave, but I don't know how to say it without sounding like a dick. Message received.
You are a dick. Yeah. No.
Annie takes the walk of shame down his driveway, but his security gate is closed. So she attempts to climb over it just as his housekeeper, maybe, drives up and opens it. So she gets a little humiliation ride atop the fence as it slowly swings open.
Okay, I really like that. I like saw her like smoothly riding on the fence and I was like, I would love to do that. That sounds like fun.
I know. I just tell the housekeeper lady, let it go. Come on, let's go for another ride. Can you just press the button one more time? This is the most action I've gotten all night. Yes, I know I just screwed your boss, but this actually is getting the vibrations and juices going downstairs. So
this is nice and slow and smooth, unlike jackass over there who's pretty but not much more than that.
Mm-mm. Then we hear the song Ripper to Shreds by Blondie while getting a montage of Milwaukee landmarks like Usinger's famous sausage factory, the Harley-Davidson Museum, the city skyline, and the Milwaukee Museum, which is an amazing building that looks like a swan about to take flight over Lake Michigan. Next, we see Annie again, but this time she's in a park, working out with her lifelong bestie, Lillian. They're on a budget, so they're covertly following Rodney's boot camp, which is having a group workout a short ways away. Rodney, played by Jeremy Cruz, seems like a prick. And if you just look at Terry Cruz, he is goddamn intimidating, just at the forefront, like he is all muscles and bald head and meanness, even though he's incredibly funny. But in the movie, he plays a prick as he screams, "Y'all look like pieces of bacon! I can smell the fat!" The friends comment on how mean and or motivating Rodney is when he notices them. They pretend like they're slow dancing in the park, but Rodney doesn't buy it. He calls them freeloaders and yells, "This class is only $12. You need to pay like these other bitches!" They laugh and run away through the park, apologizing over their shoulder that they're on a budget. I would totally do that. I would totally just be like, "Is that the exercises they're doing? Okay, great. Commit that to memory. Do it later."
You're like standing out behind a tree with your phone videotaping the whole thing. You're like, "This is for this afternoon."
Oh, yeah. I'll have it like behind the book I'm reading because I would not test Rodney. I would not test him. Him, that man looks like he would catch me if I tried running away.
Oh, yeah, but don't you want him to catch you? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. Now that you said that. Yeah, if he wasn't such a hard ass in the movie, he'd probably definitely say, "I smell like bacon."
Maybe,
but bacon's
maybe
good.
You've been a bad, bad girl.
Bad, bad bacon. Bad, bad piece of bacon.
The two friends find sanctuary in a nearby coffee shop and catch up over breakfast. Annie feels like she hasn't seen Lillian in forever, and Lillian agrees. She's been spending a lot of time in Chicago with her boyfriend Doug, but things have been weird lately. Lillian asks Annie what she did last night, and Annie admits that she hung out with Ted. Lillian is disappointed because that asshole always makes you feel like shit. She's even more appalled when she realizes that Annie slept with him. Come on. What do you think she was doing with him? Playing cards? No. You know that she was sleeping with him. Please, Lillian. Please.
Eating pizza and watching movies.
Sure.
Taking rides on his fence.
Mm-hmm. We just ride the fence together.
Oh, that sounds hot.
The couple that rides the fence together stays together. You know how that is.
What do they say if you have the all-American dream is 2.5 kids and a white picket fence? What does that mean if you just ride the fence with your husband and don't have any kids?
Mm.
What does that say about you?
You're smart. You're really smart.
Yeah. That's the Los Angelino dream on a budget.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Los Angeles dream on a budget, Annie matter-of-factly says, "We had an adult sleepover." There's Los Angeles dream on a budget, an adult sleepover.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had.
I know. I was just going to say, like we had.
When we went to go see
Patrick Hines. And I'm very glad that we did not have the experience that Annie did with fucking asshat because, yeah, it was much more fun hanging out with you and Melody.
Thanks. And I'm not an asshole.
No, you're an exceptional human being. So
thank you.
Yes. But I must admit to having fantasies about Don Draper, who is an asshole, having a little adult sleepover with him.
Mm. I know. I had the same thoughts when I was like, God damn it. Okay. Yes, he's a shithead. But if you just like put in some earbuds to drown out his fucked up-ness, mm-hmm, and just get to look at him, yeah, while he's straddling you, uh-huh, like I could put up with an hour and a half of that, maybe two.
Lillian eyes her friend over her cup of coffee and asks, "Did you let him sleep over in your mouth?" Annie's grimace says it all. Lillian thinks that Annie's being a doormat and encourages her to stand up for herself. She looks at her friend seriously and exclaims, "He also said you need a dental work. He's an asshole." Annie, not wanting to examine the poor choices she's making, instead, "Oh, no. Okay. Okay. I see you, Tamara. I see you in Bridesmaids. What? The dog in this movie is fucking John Hamm or whatever the fuck his name is.
Ted. Ted is the dog. You got me. You caught on. Ooh. You've seen through my ruse.
Yes. We open up with the dog in this movie, and it's not a cute one. I mean, it's a cute one, but it has a bad attitude.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Annie, not wanting to examine the poor choices she's making, instead puts a mashed up grape in front of her tooth, essentially blacking it out. This is like so something you would do. You'd be like, what, me? Let me just play this off. And put a grape in front of her tooth and breathes, I know you're so beautiful. Will you marry me? They are having a great time together. When they leave the cafe, they pass Annie's old bakery, which now has a for rent sign in the window. It has a super cute red storefront and was called Cake Baby. But the A is gone, and there is a cartoon version of Annie above it. Lillian apologizes and says, we should have gone down another street. Annie looks a little heartbroken and says, it's fine. It's my fault for opening a bakery during a recession. Lillian chants, look away, look away, look away, look away. That's what you would do too.
Yeah. What's that over there?
I know. As she steers her friend down the street. Annie works at... Okay. It's not... It's Choladecky.
It is not. It's Choladick.
You wish it was Choladick's. But, you know, it's fine. Jewelry.
I'm sticking with Choladick's. It's two things we used to find back in our old neighborhood. Cholas and dicks.
Mm-hmm.
Choladick.
Truth. The obvious place where everyone goes for engagement rings. But Annie's jaded, so she makes a terrible salesperson, running off potential couples with her side comments of things like, love doesn't last, and you can't trust anybody, especially the people you sleep next to. Her boss overhears her commentary and comes over to reprimand her. He tells her nobody wants to hear her problems or how her boyfriend left her. She's just here to sell jewelry. And just because it happened to you doesn't mean it happens to everyone else, Annie. Take a breath. That's what I'm saying. He calls over another salesperson, the very beautiful Kahlua. He flirts with her and asks her to show Annie the love is eternal face. Bling.
Okay, Corinne's giving a very bad version of the love is eternal face. It actually looks like she just sucked on a lemon.
That was my kissy face, and I was batting my eyes at you.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, then I would say that cutesy face is love is 10 to 15 minutes more if you want it.
Kahlua looks off in the distance with a dazed look in her eyes, which is apparently what her boss wants. Annie tries to mimic her coworker, but boss man claims she looks like she has menstrual cramps. Oh, boss man, if you weren't the boss man, we would go to HR about that comment. And she needs to get her shit together because the only reason she has a job is because Annie's mom is his AA sponsor. Oof. Living the dream, Annie. Living the dream.
What else can you expect from a chola dick?
Oof.
Sexual harassment. Gross. Okay, I initially was going to cut the scene because it's not relevant to the storyline, but I had to keep it in because it is the first time I was introduced to the wonderful Miss Rebel Wilson. And you have thoughts, Corinne?
Oh, like that whole situation, you know, it just starts raising my anxiety meter. Ding, 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 ding.
Rebel Wilson or just Rebel Wilson's character and what she does in this next scene?
Yes. Not Rebel Wilson herself. Rebel Wilson herself is sometimes complicated, very human person, but also has some very rad sides to her. And as her role in this particular movie, it can be awkward at best and then Superfly creepy, maybe worst.
And she does it so fucking well. I saw Rebel Wilson in this movie and I was like, hot damn, who is that? That girl is something fucking special because I just fell in love with her.
Aww.
Yes, her character is complicated and a hot mess, but Oh, Lord. She puts her little rebelly spin on it and mwah, chef's kiss, girl. Chef's kiss.
She makes me want to, like, hide in my closet. So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I would open up the closet and be like, have you met Rebel Wilson, Corinne? She's my new bestie. She's going to be my bridesmaid.
Great.
You guys can get to know each other.
Great.
Later that evening, the hits keep coming. She goes home to find Bryn, played by Rebel Wilson, on the couch. When she sees Annie, she excitedly gets up and tells her what a lucky day she had. Some random guy stopped me on the street and asked if I wanted a tattoo. So I say, yeah. So he went to his van and he gave me this. She rolls up her shirt to reveal a very infected Mexican worm that spans across half of her torso and explains to Annie, it's a Mexican worm. It's native for here to party. Annie is appalled not only that Bryn has survived up until this point in life, but also that her tattoo is so full of lesions. Bryn's brother Gil comes in and very politely asks Annie for the rent check. Annie asks him to look at his sister's back. He seems nonplussed at the open sores and offers maybe she put a little ice on it. Annie suggests, or perhaps a bag of peas, and there is a hilarious interaction where Annie and Gil discuss the rent check, which she obviously doesn't have, while Bryn opens a bag of frozen peas and then pours them all over her back, much to Annie's dismay. She says, you have to put the whole bag on your back, not open the bag. Hilarious!
Uh-huh.
I know it gives Corinne anxiety, but I found that scene delightful.
I just was cringing through the entire thing. Thank you.
A short while later, Annie goes to Lillian's house to hang out. Lillian springs an engagement ring on her. Her boyfriend Doug proposed the night before. That's why he's being so weird. Annie's thrilled for her bestie at first. Then she starts noticing that she's getting sweaty and fidgety and wonders aloud, what is happening? Lillian notices the cracks in her facade and offers, of course you'll be my maid of honor unless it's too much for you. I know you're busy and going through a tricky time. Annie steals her resolves and assures her friend that she'll be fine. But when Lillian's not looking, there's a slightly panicked look on her face. She goes home and gazes at a photo of them around 8-ish, arm in arm, beaming at the camera. And Corinne, every time I see this goddamn movie, I wonder how there is not a picture of us doing that same thing on our street.
No, we were totally robbed. What the fuck?
Neither of our parents believed in cameras.
Ugh. There's just that one picture of us in like the birthday party group photo and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's surprisingly and from your far family. Away. I know.
Yeah. I'm sure a drunk relative took it because you can't hardly tell it's us. Some time passes because next we see Annie picking up her mom for Lillian's engagement party. Mom sadly can't go because she forgot she was going to speak at AAA.
I'm so
I did
that
put
was
an
like
extra A in there. She's going to speak at AAA about the cautions of dangerous driving. No, she's going to speak at AA that evening. Annie scolds her mom. You're not supposed to be going to those. You're not even an alcoholic. Her mom argues, yes, but that's because I've never taken a drink before.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom's not hooked on the drink. She's hooked on the inspirational story she hears in the meeting. She sits Annie down and tells her about a recovering addict named Marvin Johnson who gave blowjobs to get crack. Annie admonishes her mom because the second letter in AA stands for anonymous hello. Her mom waves her off and continues, fine, Marvin J then. Marvin hit rock bottom and I was thinking, maybe this is your bottom, which is a good thing because there's nowhere to go but up. Her mom says a few more choice things about Annie's father, his new whore wife, even though they've been married for 12 years, and a potential sexual fetish he has called a chicken coop. Mm-hmm. This causes Annie to make a hasty exit, but not before her mom asks her to move in. Annie assures her mom, hell no, and goes off to the party alone.
I'm just stuck on chicken coop. What could that possibly be? Or is he into being put into cages?
Nope. You use your nose to peck down his back all the way until you wind up with a couple of balls in your mouth. And that's a chicken coop.
Oh, you're so much more knowledgeable about these things. Thank you.
Well, her mom says that. Her mom talks about what a chicken coop is.
Oh, really? I swear, like, there are portions of this movie where I'm like, oh, that happened? Because I'm, like, rocking the entire time I'm watching it.
You're, like, blacking it out.
Yeah.
Trauma blackouts.
I'm like, okay. I know I saw this movie just like a few days ago.
We then get a travel montage of Annie driving to Chicago while a French cover of Blister in the Sun by, I'm not even going to try to say it.
Nouveau.
I put the band here.
Vogue?
Okay. I looked it up on the Google Maps and noticed it takes a little less than 2 hours to drive from Milwaukee to Chicago. Because I was wondering that since Lillian spent so much time in Chicago and Annie was in Milwaukee. And I was like, well, how far away is Milwaukee and Chicago? Anyways.
I appreciate your knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I love a good MapQuest or Google Maps. MapQuest.
MapQuest. Wow. That's a callback.
I love a good Thomas's Guide.
Yes. Me too.
Annie arrives at the venue and it's a posh country club. A valet takes her hoopty ass car and tries to park it, but it doesn't start right away. And she tells him he has to crank it a couple of times. The inside of the club is just as fancy as the outside. Her gawking is cut short by Lillian calling her over. She wants to introduce her to the other bridesmaids. First is Rita, played by Wendy McClendon Covey, who also plays the overly doting mom, Beverly Goldberg, on the sitcom The Goldbergs, which is a far fucking cry from the character that she plays in this movie. The lady is talented. Rita's Lillian's no-nonsense cousin, who hasn't seen Annie since graduation. They do a quick catch-up where Rita shares that she has three boys, and although they start off cute, they reach a certain age where they are disgusting. Mm. Disgusting. Her whole house is covered in semen.
Yay. Yay. Things we didn't want to know.
Is this where she says she cracked a blanket in half? I cracked a blanket in half. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? In half from the semen.
Next we meet Becca, a.k.a. the incredible Kimmy... The incredible Kimmy Schmidt? The unfucking...
Breakable.
The unbreakable. Thank you. The unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, who's Lillian's coworker. She just got married and she and her husband, Kevin, are super sweet and a bit socially awkward. Becca mistakenly thinks the balding kind of creepy guy next to Annie is Annie's boyfriend. Annie nopes out of that. But creepy guy is game and asks if she wants to go for a walk later. She does not. Good choice, Annie. Good choice. You don't make a lot of good choices during this movie, but that one is a good one.
Spot on.
Yes. Then they meet Douglas's sister, Megan, played by Melissa McCarthy. Megan is a character. And when Lillian leaves Annie to steer her grandma clear of the wine, Megan regales Annie with a near-death experience she just had when she fell off a cruise ship but was saved by a telepathic dolphin. I mean, who doesn't want to be saved by a telepathic dolphin? The dolphin looked into her soul and told her, "I'm saving you." And I've had experiences where I felt like an animal and I have looked into each other's souls, so I kind of get it.
You're so a Megan. I even wrote in the notes and I was like, although Megan is a character, I think she may be Corinne's beverage spirit animal because she has a huge fruity drink with all the fancy fruit garnish in it that Corinne loves to get when we go to the tiki bars, even though they're the non-alcoholic versions.
Oh, she very well may be my beverage kindred spirit. Yes. Megan also tries to associate a random guy dressed like a sea captain as Annie's boyfriend. So, yeah. Once again, Annie shuts that shit down. Once Megan finds out he's not with her, she's relieved. Great. I can't wait to climb him like a tree. And lastly, Annie gets the privilege, the choice treat of meeting Helen, the newest addition to Lillian's friend group. Helen is across the room and turns in glamorous slow-mo. She's in a floor-length sequined gown, and the bottom of the dress turns a full second after she does. Because, you know, who doesn't wear a sequined gown to an engagement party, right?
Everybody else besides her doesn't wear a sequined dress to an engagement party. She'd be the only one that has a sequencing address on at that party.
Yeah. Huh. Odd. I thought it was standard fare, but okay, whatever. I thought that's why you had like a closet full of like a quarter of your closet was sequin dresses just hanging there because of all your, you know, engagement parties that you've been to.
Oh, no, that's for all the sexy time and the role playing we do.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Annie straightens up a little when she sees Helen and smooths her outfit as Helen makes her way over. Annie's flustered, and the only thing she can say is, "You're so pretty." Helen is gracious, but figuratively speaking, pees on Lillian because she wants to be her best friend. Weed, weed, weed. She is very mm-hmm. single white female throughout this entire, like, thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything that Annie is like, suggests, she's like, that's a dumb idea. And then she, like, takes the idea, runs with it, and does it bigger and better than Annie ever could possibly do.
Yeah, because she's got the tons of money to bankroll those ideas. Uh-huh. Where Annie's, like, subdued and, you know, quaint. And she's like, let's just do it up. Money's no object.
Yeah. Helen's husband is Doug's boss, and they're essentially joined at the hip. Lillian and Helen are joined at the hip, is what Helen tells Annie, which is perfect because, so are we. I don't know what that is. I'm confused.
Okay. Helen and Lillian are joined at the hip because their husband and boss are joined at the hip.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I tried to make the sentence make sense, but I needed to read it like you wrote it. Because I didn't understand that it actually did make sense. You are so knowledgeable. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I did write it, so I hope I know what I wrote.
I don't know. Sometimes we just kind of write and we end up with AAA instead of AA, you know.
Hey. Way to bring it back. Way to put me in my place. Are you feeling a little uppity, Tam? Let's just scroll back to a paragraph and a half ago, shall we?
No. Like I said, I am forever indebted to you for writing this script. By the way, gentle listeners, doing any movie that is over 2 hours, like, it's a lot of writing. And I know because our following movie is also a long one. A longy. Hmm. Helen has to leave to check on the hors d'oeuvres. Helen leaves to check the hors d'oeuvres, and yeah, it's pretty obvious that Helen is the one who threw the engagement party because Annie could never have afforded that working at Cholo Dick's Jewelers.
How dare you? It's Chola Dick's.
Oh, sorry. Chola Dick's. Yeah. Shortly after Annie meets everyone, they have speeches. Lillian's dad wishes the couple luck and also that they should elope and save him a buttload of money. The attendees laugh, but he's not kidding. Next, Annie, the maid of honor, goes up. Oh, anxiety level starting to rise. And gives a nice simple toast about being glad she's part of the celebration and how Lillian and Doug deserve each other and a lifetime of happiness. This I have absolutely no problem with. It's just anticipating what's to come.
So, gentle listeners, if anybody out there is of the drinking sort, you might want to start by playing a little drinking game called Where is Corinne's Anxiety? When the anxiety starts rising, you take a shot. If we started already, you'd be at 2.5 shots.
Yeah, I think that people may die of alcohol poisoning, so maybe not the drinking game. But just, yeah.
Well, I'll find out when I edit this the first round. I'll try it. I'll report back. If I don't get back to you, you were right.
As Annie's leaving the stage, Helen snags the mic and gives her own speech. She talks about a bonding moment between her and Lillian had in Miami. They ate peanut brittle, drank wine, and shared things with each other, which showed Helen she could trust people again. She wipes away a tear before she adds, "And Dougley, inside joke, don't keep Lily too busy because I still need my drunken Saturday nights at Rockin' Sushi." Woo! The crowd woos back, per Tamara. And before she finishes, let's raise our glasses to the couple of the decade, Doug and Lillian. The crowd cheers as Helen gets off the stage. Anxiety rising further.
That's still part of the first anxiety attack. You don't need to take another drink.
Thank you for saving our gentle listeners, lovers. And yeah, so Annie snakes the mic again. clearly she feels like she's been outdone and needs to rectify this. She informs the crowd that Lily is so special to her because they have known each other their whole lives, and Lily's friendship helped shape who she is. And this is exactly the speech I'd be giving. Oh, this is Tamara. Tamara, you need to read this part.
And I've inserted in there very gently that this is exactly the speech I'd be giving at Corinne's engagement party if someone was trying to pee on her, a.k.a. marking their territory. Not something fetishy to do with pee.
Yeah, I'm not into that fetishy. I actually went out with a guy once who was like, he looked at me deep into my eyes and he said, would you be open to opening your mouth and letting me pee in it? And I said,
really?
Yes.
Oh, no. I'd be the peer. I don't think I'd be the pee.
Which is what I said to him.
Even know if I'd be okay. Yeah.
I said,
and I,
there's no more dates after this, but I said to him, no, but if you want to be in a bathtub and have me pee on you, gangbusters.
And I don't think I would do it religiously. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't be like, yeah, who's getting peed on tonight? I would just try it to say I did it. Probably never do it again or see the person that I did do the deed on ever.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. Not into water sports, personally. But, you know, for those who are, super happy for you. Which is why I told him that, you know, GGG would pee on him. But, yeah. So, Annie thanks her bestie for carefully selecting her as the maid of honor, even though she had other choices. Helen. She didn't choose you. Step off, bitch. That's not what she says, but it is what she says in the silence. Are they done, though? Corinne's anxiety rises even higher because they're not. No. Annie and Helen have another couple of rounds of I'm the better bestie speeches, much to the audience's amusement, which include Helen sharing a sentimental tie phrase she learned, and Annie, not above pulling the bilingual card, followed with things her and Lillian learned in Spanish class. Gracias para vivir en la casa, en las escuelas azul mercado tienes beber. And for the finale, they gave silent, meaningful looks to Lillian and break out in a dueling duet of oh, well, this is great because Annie starts out singing That's What Friends Are For. But Helen, not to be outdone, jumps up on stage, grabs a mic and sings along with her. That's what friends are for. Oof. Oh, and Corinne is now rocking in the corner. It's fine, though. It's fine. Everything's good, Corinne.
Corinne.
Yes.
Keep smiling. Keep shining. Knowing you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, so, and then they finally get off stage. Thank freaking goodness. At the end of the night, as Lillian and Annie are saying goodbye, Annie asks, what's the deal with Helen? She's in your wedding and you've known her for 8 months? And I say, what in the fuck was Annie blindsided by Lillian? Seriously? Like, if you had if you had a fucking Helen in your life, I would want to know about it. I wouldn't want to go to your engagement party and be surprised by this person who you're doing all this shit with. Like, be like, oh, you didn't know about this other person who I spend all this time with having a great time?
Okay, stop giving me the stink eye. I didn't do it to you. But I think maybe that Lillian realizes that Annie's in a very delicate state and she probably didn't want to poke the bear. And I don't think she was doing it intentionally, but sometimes when you avoid, it kind of gets bigger than it actually is. I'm not justifying or saying it's right, but
right.
Like Annie does get a little crazy and unhinged, and she was already like, I know she was like, you've already known her for 8 months, but yeah, I think she was probably just like, I didn't feel like you could handle me having another friend at this point in time. Maybe. Question mark. I don't know.
Okay. You're a Lillian defender. I get it. So Lillian knew this was coming and tells her friend that oh, that's pretty cool, and asks Annie to hang out with her and try to get to know her.
Let's see how that goes, shall we?
But before we do, on the way home, Annie is fuming and mocks Helen and her extravagant, over-the-top persona. While she's driving, she flings her head around so much that her car veers back and forth on the road, catching the eye of a cop who pulls her over. Cut to Annie on the side of the road walking the white line while touching her nose. She insists to the cop that she's not drunk, but he's gruff, and apparently Irish because he has an accent, and not entirely convinced. He counters, "So you're just a terrible driver." Oh, so you're just a terrible sober driver. I'm not going to try an accent with him. That was really bad. She asks, if I was drunk, could I do this? She proceeds to Charleston do a chorus line dance, which sort of morphs into a pop and lock situation. She's trying to break his seriousness, but the cop just asks her to please stop and tells her she's getting a ticket for the broken taillights. This is an additional expense and not what she needs right now. She pleads and flirts, but is not getting any sympathy. Defeated, she goes back to her car and hands him her license and registration. He begins writing the ticket and notes where she lives. "We're neighbors," he says with a little more warmth in his voice. "I live on Ashley." Annie shrugs and says, "Oh, I used to work on Ashley. I had a bakery on the main part of the street." This jogs the cop's memory. "Cake Baby, you had the bakery with your picture on the sign." She's surprised he's familiar with it, and he admits that he was a big fan of her cakes and the things that she made with the cream or the custard in them. He waves his pen around trying to remember the name of them, and I can imagine somewhere off in the distance, Corinne, wherever she is watching this movie, is screaming, "Cream Puffs! For the love of God, they're called Cream Puffs!"
Or I'd be hopefully yelling, "Eclairs! They're eclairs! I love eclairs!"
Oh, yeah. Cream Puffs.
But they're not eclairs, yeah. Sadly.
Or eclairs, that's right. Cream puffs or eclairs.
Well, they're very similar, cream puffs and eclairs.
Yes. He tells her they were delicious, and he used to get served by some guy with the sort of wormy face. Annie's expression falls a bit as she tells him that was her boyfriend, but he left when the business went under. The officer apologizes and then quips, "Well, I'm glad I never tipped him then." This fails to get a reaction from her, and he waits a moment before tearing the ticket up and telling her just to forget about it. He won't give her a ticket as long as she gets her taillights fixed. Her face lights up, and she thanks him profusely. She really appreciates it. He hands her ID back and says, "Well, I really appreciated your kicks."
You know what my anxiety level is during this whole exchange?
-2.
Yeah. It's so cute. It's so cute. I love it all.
He hands her a business card for a local repair shop run by Bill Cosby with a Z, and don't comment on the other Bill Cosby, it drives him crazy, and gives her his name to get his discount, Officer Rhodes. She starts driving away and something changes in Officer Rhodes' demeanor. He tells her that not all cops are bad. Well, the other ones are, but I'm not. I'm one of the good ones. And waves at her while her little hearts pop in his eyes. Her cakes must have been really fucking good, because once she found out that she was Cake Baby, it was on.
At the point in time of this movie, there were not a huge hoo-ha about Bill Cosby's sexual assault allegations. So.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That would be like, that was a poor choice of name twins.
Yeah.
Because if my name was Bill Cosby these days, I'd be like, fuck my life. I am changing my name.
Oh, the last name would be changed. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is because it was like Cozbi for that mechanic guy. Uh-huh. And I'll be like, oh no, it's Cozabe.
Yes.
My name is Bill Cozabe.
Seriously. Maybe they just should change it to Cosio. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Oh, no.
Oh, damn.
Cozabe is better.
Cozabe is better.
A short while later, Annie keeps her word to Lillian and goes to the country club to play tennis with Helen. They sit while waiting for a court to open up. Lillian could make it, or could she? And she just wanted them to get to know each other. We'll never know. And they go back and forth about Lillian, or Annie and Helen go back and forth about Lillian. She never used to like tennis or sports, according to Annie, but Helen shares that she loves it now. They have a little disagreement about how much Lillian's changed, according to Helen, versus how much she's still the same person, per Annie.
It's rising. It's rising. There was a nice little vacay previously with the cute Irish guy. Not more.
And we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah.
knee deep in it, batting around that anxiety with the tennis rackets now. There is obviously an underlining meaning behind the exchange. Will Lillian stay Annie's best friend forever, or will she change enough to want a new and improved bestie like Helen? Question mark.
Oh, my gosh. Helen's... Tamara, you can't get better than me, okay?
Oh, all right. Well, if you're starting to scare me, I might want something that reduces my anxiety a little bit.
Fine.
That gaze you're giving me is a little fucking intense, Corinne. Okay, that's better. That's your love is eternal or 10 to 15 minutes face. That's okay. That's okay. Helen's kids pass by and she tries playing the doting stepmother, but it's obvious that they despise her, especially when she asks, do you guys need a ride later? And her stepson says, oh, fuck off, Helen.
Oof.
This secretly delights Annie because Helen's not perfect after all. Their court opens up and even though Annie and Helen are there for blood, they're paired because the tensions have been rising between them this whole time. They are paired with a couple of mild-mannered looking soccer moms and the doubles tournament is on! It's the second tennis bruise bath in ODK history. The first one being in, Corinne, do you remember?
No.
2 weeks notice.
Okay.
Sandra
okay.
Bullock uh-huh. and the redheaded girl.
Oh, batting right. each other. Yes. Thank you. Oh, my God. Yeah, both of them. Oh, on both sides, the tensions were high. Just like here, too.
Oh, my God. I just thought of something. That was the other ODK tennis bruise bath and also the other incident of pooping your pants. Oh, my God. What is happening? We might have a theme we have to explore a month.
Okay.
Tennis and poopy pants. I'm just kidding.
Well, I also am just going to bring this up. I feel like our Feb, woo, no, you didn't, you worry, like traveled into the month of March.
Well, not with our first movie, Love to the Rescue.
Yeah, because the whole premise of the sharing a dog was super.
Yeah, that was just stupid. Yeah. that was poor decision making.
Okay, two out of the three of movies.
Okay, yeah, I could see that, yeah. Definitely. Anyways, second tennis bruise bath in ODK history. There are boobs hit, swears sworn, welts given, butts slapped, and ultimately Annie and her partner Carol prevail.
Wait, and wasn't the person's name Annie or something like that in 2 weeks' notice?
No, it was
Lucy.
Oh, God.
It
Lucy.
Was a, yeah, okay.
Same thing. Annie, Lucy.
Two syllables, ends in an E, might as well be the same name.
Anyways, Helen grumbles under her breath while her stepkids watch closely and comment, I've seen better tennis and tampon commercials. Oof. But it is a small, short-lived victory for Annie.
Helen's stepchildren are horrible. Like, I felt bad for Helen.
I did, but I wonder what transpired between mm-hmm. them to get them to be so bitter and vindictive. Like, did they come home and see Helen fucking their father and, like, their mom run off and try to OD on pills from it or some shit like that? Like, there's got to be some bad blood and some story behind that.
Yeah, I also agree that could be an issue. Plus, as a kid, well, and as an adult, too, when I felt like adults were being fake with me. Boo, 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 boo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I can't stand salespeople. I feel so bad. But when somebody comes over and they're like, hey, I'm your blah, blah, blah representative. I just like turn around and walk away. I'm like, I'm not the person you need to talk to because I'm not the one that does any buying decisions. So let me just go get that person for you.
You're like, I don't know who that person is, but it's not me.
Yeah. I just turn around wordlessly and walk away. Ma'am? No.
No. A few days or weeks, who knows, later. And
we don't know. It doesn't say.
We don't know.
Luck of the draw.
I know. You never think about the timing in these things, like when you're watching the movie until you have to script it out. And then you're like, where's the timeline? Where's the timeline?
What the fuck happened between then and now?
Seriously. Annie takes Lillian and the rest of the bridesmaids. Oh, no.
And drink.
Feeling the excitement again. To a Brazilian restaurant she likes. Before they shop for bridesmaid dresses. Helen low-key looks down her nose at it because
you can get checks cashed next door. There's graffiti in the parking lot and a stray dog crosses their path.
Oh, another dog. Wow, we just got dogs on dogs on dogs.
Yeah, there's the dog in the beginning, the dog right here, and the dogs at the end. Yeah. It is dog heavy in this movie, mm-hmm. Corinne. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's practically like 101 Dalmatians going on here.
Let me see how many fucking dog movies you can compare it to before we're done with this.
But Lillian assures everyone,
Annie has a knack for finding the authentic, lesser known places. Inside, Lillian gives a toast. Oh, and Tamara, it's time for you to share.
I said this is my second most favorite quotable movie scene ever as Lillian raises her glass and says, to my bridesmaids, this is such a stone cold pack of weirdos and I'm so proud. And aww. I said that to many a group of people throughout my life. I don't find enough opportunities to insert it into conversations, but when I do or when I can, I sure do.
Yes, that is an excellent toast. Everyone enjoys the circulating skewers of meat. The one and only time I had Brazilian barbecue, I got food poisoning. But anywho.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, it was just so expensive. I don't eat that much. Going to places where it's all you can eat meat stuff is like not a good deal for me because I like have an average size portion or less. And I'm like, okay, I could have spent like $10, $15 less on food. Instead, I'm here.
And I am like, challenge accepted.
Exactly. You are an excellent person to go. I am a bad investment for these kinds of places. Mm-hmm. But everyone enjoys the circulating skewers of meat except Helen, who sticks to a salad, explaining that I don't want to look bloated for the dress fitting later. When Lillian goes to the bathroom, Annie takes this opportunity to run a bridal party idea by the other ladies. She pitches a Paris theme with fancy French wine and cookies and cheese from the nice part of the store. And I think that you would be thrilled to have this kind of a theme as long as there were also appropriate olives and accoutrement like that along with it. Because
all I need are good snacks to make a good. I'm happy at a party with good snacks. Right? I don't care. Like, no music. Don't have to have games.
Lots of dips.
Snacks. Oh, yeah.
Good cheeses. Dips. Good.
Yep.
Fucking. I don't know what they're called, but like the olives and shit. Yeah. Good. That kind of stuff.
Charcuterie board.
Yes.
Glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
I have a party of one by myself all the time with all that shit in front of me. I'm like, yeah, it's a party. Woo!
Charcuterie board extravaganza.
I have such a sad. One time I went out with a bunch of my cousins to a winery and we made it a theme for the summers. We would all try to get together because we live pretty far away at wineries. The first time we did it, we got this overly priced charcuterie board that was like $45. And there was like six of us.
Uh-huh.
So it was gone in like 25 minutes.
Right.
And we were like, well, fuck that. We are not paying another $45 for a charcuterie because we weren't really that hungry anyways, but uh-huh. It just like disappeared like that.
Yeah.
And so the next summer we went to another winery and God bless my cousin, Nicole. She brought bags and bags of stuff to make her own charcuterie plates.
Nice.
Because it was like a picnic bench situation where you could bring your outside food if you like.
Right.
As long as you were drinking the wine.
Yeah.
And she completely made this huge spread, but everybody remembering what happened the summer before had eaten before we got there.
Oh.
And so nobody ate the charcuterie. I mean, there was like a little dents in it and I like forced myself because I was like, she went through so much trouble and she's so goddamn sweet. And then she was just at the end going, I don't understand it. Last time it just disappeared. Now nobody wants to hardly eat anything. And I was like, well, I just had like a full on big ass lunch before I got here because A, wine, and B, I don't want to pay $45 for a goddamn charcuterie board.
Aw, your cousin is so sweet. I love your cousins. They're wonderful.
And resourceful. She's fucking resourceful as shit. She's like, what do you need? Hold on. I can do that twice as good at half the price should be her motto.
Yeah, well, we all know who she was raised by, your aunt, who was very resourceful woman. So,
oh, yes. Yes, she was.
There you go. Anywho. Annie explains
that this would be perfect for Lillian because she's always wanted to go to Paris, so they'll bring Paris to her. Everyone likes the idea, but Helen can't be one-upped. Paris has been there, done that. We should brainstorm other ideas. Megan suggests Female Fight Club, where they surprise Lillian and beat the shit out of her. That's unforgettable, right?
Right?
Right? Right? Right?
I don't ever want that to happen ever to me, ever. Party or otherwise.
No, I'm like, that's a terrible idea. This causes some what-the-fuck expressions around the table. Understandably, Rita cuts off the brainstorming because they also need to address the most important issue. What they're doing for the bachelorette party. Woot woot! She's stuck at home with three boys and she needs to wild out for a night. She has a new tube top she wants to cut the tags off of. Nothing gets solidified. Annie tries to politely bat away the ideas by saying, I'm sure we'll figure it out. While Helen reminds her, no matter what, it's got to be really, really special. Parentheses, not like that lame Paris idea.
Uh-huh. Just hallmark that for later because we're going to come back to it.
Mm-hmm. Annie smiles at her, but you can see the thinly veiled daggers in her eyes. After lunch, the gang goes to Belle en Blanc, the most she bridal store in town. Everyone commends Annie on the choice until she presses the buzzer to enter and is informed by a curt salesperson, we don't take walk-ins, and the next appointment isn't for 7 weeks. Helen takes the helm at the buzzer and says, Whitney, it's Helen! Whitney squeals, Helen Harris, hi! She knows exactly who she is and happily buzzes them in. Once inside, Whitney tells them about the dresses, but is interrupted by a long, deep belch from Megan, who apologizes, saying, I'm not entirely sure what end that came from. The rest of the bridal party is almost knocked over by the smell of whatever that was, and Corinne's anxiety rises higher.
Drink, drink, drink!
Helen recommends the couture Fritz Bernays dress. It's $800, and Annie quickly suggests a cute short pink dress with pockets. With pockets! With pockets, motherfucker!
Mm-hmm.
That's much less expensive. Pretending that she doesn't want to upstage Lillian's wedding dress, Lillian ensures her friends, don't worry about upstaging my dress. Helen knows the designer, Lady St. Patois Juju, who is now, I know I didn't pronounce that correctly, but you can correct me, Tam.
You said it pretty close.
Okay. Who is now
Lady Patois Juju.
There we go. Who is now personally designing my wedding dress. I just sent my measurements to France, y'all. Annie looks floored. She keeps getting outdone and undermined by her now arch nemesis, Helen, who suggests they all let their bodies decide on the dress. Cut to all the ladies in a semicircle clad in various bridesmaid dresses. Whitney, the clerk, informs everyone that she's found an old lady Juju dress, so they'd get an idea of what the bride would be wearing. Lillian comes out in a one-strap, full-on fluffy princess gown. Everybody oohs and ahs over it until Megan dry heaves. Anxiety is getting so high now. She jogs it up to her dress being tight, but a wet fart coming out her other end begs to differ. Helen recognizes what's going on and announces, you got food poisoning from that restaurant. Annie weakly argues, that can't be the cause. They ate the same thing. But slowly, one by one, the bridesmaids get sweatier and finally beeline it to the toilet. Are they doing the girl group trip to the bathroom? Are all their dresses too tight? Did they indeed get food poisoning from that green-looking lamb or gray chicken? Find out with us after the break.
And we're back. And I only mentioned the green-looking lamb or the gray chicken because that's what Helen says to try to goat Annie, that she did indeed get food poisoning. And that made my stomach turn a little bit. Green-looking lamb or gray chicken. Anyways, back at Belle en Blanc. As the ladies beeline to the bathroom, Whitney follows after them, shrieking, you have to go outside! Go outside! There's a bathroom across the street! But it's too late. Rita
projectile vomits on the toilet cover before throwing it open and full-on puking. Megan storms in after her, demanding to use it, but Rita waves her off, forcing Megan to shit in the sink. Whitney comes in and practically has a nervous breakdown, much like Corinne, at the spectacle. Megan demands that everybody, look away! Look away! Something's coming out of me! It's like lava! Becca, who's last in, accidentally throws up on Rita's head while trying to get to the toilet. Outside the bathroom, Annie looks green and as if she's going to sweat herself to death while trying to convince Helen she doesn't have food poisoning.
I just have to say, this was just a wonderful little tidbit of cinematography because it's like a single shot between Annie and Helen. So Helen's like, are you sure you don't have food poisoning? Cut to Annie, who's just like drenched in sweat. And she's like, no, I feel fine. Cut to Helen. Are you sure? Cut to Annie, who's even more sweatier. No, I think I'm just hungry. So it's just like, as the camera goes back to her, she increasingly gets wetter and wetter. Oh my God. It never gets old for me. I know it doesn't resonate with you, but I find it delightful.
If you had given me this section, it would have been two sentences long. You did not give me that section, though.
Anyways, where were we? Oh, yeah, shitting ourselves. Here we go. She's trying to convince Helen she doesn't have food poisoning. She even manages to choke down a Jordan almond to prove it. Lillian, not looking much better, shuffles towards Annie and pants. Annie, everyone's really sick. But she doesn't get much further because something is happening. Lily clenches her body and tries to shimmy outside. She needs a bathroom now. She runs into the street, stops traffic both ways, and finally sinks to the floor. Whitney flies out of the door and shrieks, "Do not ruin that dress!" While Annie sneers at her poor friend's predicament and mutters, Oh, you're really doing it. Oh, you're shitting in the street. She is. The bride-to-be looks gorgeous in her juju dress, even as she shits herself and waves at cars to go around her. Mm-hmm. Helen, in an effort to try to placate the traumatized sales clerk, leans towards her and says, we'll just take 5 of the Fritz Bernese's. They really are the best. On the way home, Annie and Lillian look much, much worse. Lillian mutters almost incoherently how she shit herself, and is this all a sign? Annie assures her it's not, pulls off the road under the guise that she has to check her tires, and finally she too hurls. They all did indeed get food poisoning. A little while after, Annie goes to Ted's house for another booty call. She casually, not casually, asks him to go to the wedding with her as her date.
Oh, no.
He shuts that shit down and asks her to go. Their work here is done. She stops on the way home to pick up a beverage and sees Officer Rhodes. He's way more cordial and asks what brings her in this time of night.
What's my anxiety level right now?
It's like neck level. It's up to here. Your anxiety level's up to here.
Now it's a -2 again. It's
That's right. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still in the other scene. Yes. You should have gave me a few more sentences and I would have caught on. I got you. Okay. She admits she had a tough night and he asks if she wants him to arrest anyone. She declines, so instead he offers a sympathetic ear, because cops are like priests, except we can tell everyone what you say. She snickers, and he assures her that I won't, though. She's not entirely sold until he offers her one of his baby carrots that he was about to purchase. She finally agrees, and outside the store she spills her soul to him atop his police car while munching on baby carrots. Mm. He sympathizes with her maid of honor horror stories. When his sister was a maid of honor, she found it so stressful that her hair started falling out. He tells her that she shouldn't stress out about wedding stuff, though. She should start a new bakery. Annie declines and says, I don't do that anymore. My baking heart has been broken.
Aww.
The mood's been brought down a little until Annie pulls a nasty gray carrot out of the bag. Rhodes excitedly tells her, that's a lucky carrot. You have to eat it.
She's
still too fresh from food poisoning and declines. I'll eat it then. But before he can, she bats it out of his hand.
She's a good friend.
His officerial obligation will not allow him to litter, so he picks it up. The flirting starts to thicken. She asks how he became a cop. She didn't think he could because he wasn't born in this country. He tells her that's normally the case, but they made an exception because I am so big and strong and handsome.
And he's not actually big or that strong looking. And he's cute, but he's not handsome.
Hey, don't tell him that. He's living in his own Officer Rhodes world, and you can't tell him any different.
Oh, I'll take Officer Rhodes any day. Hello.
And you don't know, he might be wiry.
You know, those guys that don't look like they're super strong, but they can fucking like mess you up because mm-hmm. they're just all muscle and
sinew.
Yeah, sinew.
And sex.
And cock. Okay, take that last part out.
No, we're keeping it. We're keeping it in.
And he takes his bicep and gives it a squeeze. He chuckles and complains that she didn't even give him time to flex. She says that she's tough too and could be a cop if she wants. He smiles and accepts her challenge. It's almost daylight, so he takes her to his favorite speed trap spot and shows her how to use his radar gun. And I don't mean that in a nasty way. They are flirting hard and the juices are flowing, especially when she clocks a speeder going 91 in a 50-mile-per-hour zone. And he lets her ride along to apprehend them. And I put, is that legal? I don't think that's legal.
No.
That's 1,000% illegal, because if that happens to turn into a high-speed chase where he has to actually apprehend somebody and she's in a car along with him, yeah, that's not good.
Well, I also know from personal experience you're not allowed to ride in the front seat of a cop car, so.
How do you know from experience?
Yes.
Do tell.
How
do you know from experience?
I thought that there was a guy who might have been trying to like attack me or something like that. The police ended up getting called and the guy gave me a ride down the street, but I had to sit in the back seat of the car.
Bummer. But did he have a partner?
No.
Oh,
he was like, I'm sorry, I can't let you sit in the front seat. You have to sit in the back.
Well, Officer Rhodes apparently is a entirely different animal.
Yes. Well, I would say taking a girl while you're on shift to point the radar gun at people, maybe not the best idea to keeping your job. But I don't, who am I to say? I don't know.
He's a special kind of cop. He's big and strong and handsome, and they make exceptions for him.
Yes. And also, this is like the delightful part of the movie. So I'm just going with it.
Okay.
The next couple of sections, Tamara calls, the plane's going up while shit's going down. And I've minimized it to an absolute shit show part two, because part one was the food poisoning incident. Annie tries to get the bachelorette party at Lillian's family cabin, but the rest of the party isn't having it and goes for Rita's suggestion of Vegas, baby. So they all board a plane to fly to Vegas, and it's a shit show of chaos. Helen ends up drugging Annie, who is having major anxiety. Annie ends up acting a fool because of the drugs, mocks Helen, and gets on the intercom saying, there's someone on the wing of the plane, a la the Twilight Zone episode. She is churning butter up there, and there's something they're not telling us. In the crescendo of this scene, Annie runs up and down the aisles, attempting to elude the flight attendants. Her nervous seatmate echoes, there's something they're not telling us, and shrieks, we need to get out. In the midst of this, Rita and Becca share a lady love kiss amongst the drunken bonding, and the plane is rerouted to the nearest airport, which happens to be Casper, Wyoming. The ladies are escorted off the plane, put on a no-fly list, and are forced to take a bus back home. Tamara looked it up, and driving to Milwaukee would be 16 and a half hours, not to mention all the stops buses usually make in between. Sometime during the ride, Annie is back in her right frame of mind and apologizes for the flying fiasco. She tells her bestie Lillian that her bridal shower is going to be epic, but Lillian withdraws Annie's responsibility as maid of honor. The rest of the planning will go to Helen, and although Annie will be the maid of honor in title, she will not be bogged down with any more stress or responsibility. Annie takes this info in stride and agrees if that is what Lillian wants, because she just wants to make her happy.
Oh, shiznuts, condensed to the condensedest of condensation forms. That was like 2 pages as I wrote it, and Corinne succinctly put it down to like a paragraph and a half.
And that's what I would have done for you, gentle listeners, if she had given me the shitting in the bridal scene, and she knew that, so she just cut me out of that business, and she got in the middle of that scene and took it over.
I did want this podcast episode to be longer than a half an hour, absolutely.
Oh, by the way, my anxiety during that scene, very high, very, very high.
Oh, my God. There's just so many. You didn't even mention Megan trying to seduce the air marshal that wasn't an air marshal. Oh, my God.
That was an air marshal.
Well, he said he wasn't an air marshal, but he was an air marshal. I know, you know, we watched the same movie. I'm just saying, like, that was just like a whole other gem.
Yes. Oh, and who is Megan McCarthy? Is her real life
husband. Yeah. Yeah. They're in a lot of movies. Like, he's in a lot of her movies, which I think is kind of sweet.
Yeah. He's a cutie.
And it totally explains the weird sandwich sex tape that they make at the end, which I really, that is the one part of the movie that makes me feel slightly uncomfortable.
And yet you mentioned it in the notes.
Yeah, because I didn't know if you wanted to say it. I probably know that you did not, but I stuck it in there in case you wanted to elaborate on it, where I did not, but I just mentioned it, so there it is. After they return home, Annie seeks out Officer Rhodes. He's in his favorite spot, and she asks if he'd like to hang out. He would. And we next see them in a dive bar. He's laughing heartily at her newest installment as the Maid of Dishonor, but she's still too close to the situation. She is sure most of the women in the bridal party hate her. And Rhodes gives his one-note response, "You should forget everything and start baking again." She reiterates how she's not doing that anymore. She lost a lot of money in that investment. Rhodes argues that just because she didn't make money doesn't mean she was a failure. And that he's been thinking about her a lot during the past weeks because she's someone who sticks. He must have said the right things because next we cut to them getting busy at his house. A full-on lovemaking fest.
And where's Corinne's anxiety during the Officer Rhodes scene?
Is it two stories down?
Yeah, yeah. Hmm? How many Officer Rhodes scenes have I had to describe so far, Tamara?
I did not really. Okay, okay. Note to self. In anxiety-inducing movies such as this, this is one that we've kind of done, the first one. I know we've had some hard, heavy hitters, but I now am getting a sense of what I can give you. And I will take the helm on the rest of the stuff and not condense it down to two sentences. I get it. I get it.
I was happy to condense that down to two sentences. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. And I did not realize that I get all the Rhodes ones. And you're like, that is just delightful. I sure wish I was saying this part and the one before it and the one before that.
No. I'm just saying that it's delightful. Like, I actually legitimately enjoy these sections. That's all right. I'm saying. And I'm just giving you a hard time about the other part.
I will gladly give those over to you now because I can definitely do without them. My anxiety is up to here while you say the other ones that I think are just fucking hilarious. Oh. Anyways, the next morning, Annie wakes up at Rhodes' place, and instead of finding a stupid prick that asks her to leave, she sees him gazing at her. Creepy, on the side of the bed. He assures her that he hasn't been there that long and hands her a cup of homemade cappuccino.
Aww.
He tells her he had a lot of fun last night, and whenever she's ready to get dressed, he has more fun for them in the next room. When she wanders out a short while later, she sees all the baking necessities she could ever need lined up on his counter. Rhodes tells her he snuck out that morning to pick it up and thought they could bake together. Or more specifically, she could bake and he could eat. This freaks her the fuck out. So she gets angry, says last night was a mistake, and he doesn't know her and leaves in a huff. In a huff!
In a huff! I feel like he was out of line with that last act of... Because she's already shut him down twice about the baking thing, and then he's like, here's all these mixing bowls, and I have flour and sugar just waiting for you. Like... That I understand that he was well-intentioned, but I just think he was really out of line with that.
I think so, too. I think she might have overreacted a tidbit, but I think that he... Yeah. No, it's like, I think potentially sugar says crack. Like, he's just got, like, the hugest sweet tooth in the world. And it would be like if you had a cocaine dealer spend the night and you were, like, jonesing for a fix and you're like, hey, I got all the stuff to, like, cut some cocaine. You want to just do it real quick? Maybe it might be justifiable. No? Okay, just me? Got it.
That's an interesting simile. Tamara.
Well, because I kept saying, like, every time he's like, you should bake. And I'm like, Rhodes gives his one-note answer. You should bake. Mm-hmm. Times are hard. You should bake. Yeah. Your friends all hate you. You should bake. There's obviously, like, something going on in the background of his head that's just like, sweets, 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 sweets.
He wants a cream pop.
Yeah, that's what she said. Don't say that. Don't. I think that there's something going on with him that just like overrides his good judgment that has to do with sweets and cakes and baking. And that might be why he was like, oh, your cake baby. Oh my God, you can cook me all the delicious things and bake me all that stuff.
I don't think he's wrong to encourage her, though, to fucking,
no,
like,
not
you know,
at all. But yeah. Boundaries.
Yes,
no
boundaries.
Means no.
For real.
First no. The second no.
Done.
The third no.
Oh, fuck no. Yeah. That's what we say. Third no. Oh, fuck no.
So she leaves, much to Rhodes' confusion and dismay. On the way home, she attempts to call Lillian, but she gets her voicemail. Annie apologizes and says, I'm sure you're still mad at me, but I just wanted to let you know that I slept with a great guy who was sweet and cute. And of course, I ran out on him because that's what I do.
Aww.
Call me. The next day, dun, dun, Annie gets an invitation. Dun, dun, to Lillian's bridal shower. Dun, 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 dun. And it's the Parisian theme that she pitched to Helen, which got shot down, complete with the gift box, candle, and a live butterfly. What the fuck? It's super apparent now that Helen was undermining Annie intentionally. A short while later, she goes to work and is approached at the jewelry counter by a tween girl who wants to buy her BFF a necklace that says, Friends Forever. This triggers Annie, and in true Annie form, she flies off the handle, pushes her shit onto this poor, unsuspecting, and underage customer, and she goes off on a tangent about how people don't stay your friends, and your friends eventually move on to somebody richer and more popular and leave you in the dirt. The tween calls Annie weird, and it starts off a verbal assault that is low-key hilarious and I'm sure gave Corinne tons of anxiety.
I don't know if I felt anxious about it so much as I was just like, that's totally fucked up. And Annie was so out of line. It was just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it was funny. It was funny because I know deep down in my heart it did not happen. It was just a movie. So yeah. It's just the writing on this is.
And I'm like,
Annie,
she's talking like that to a teenager. That's really fucked up. So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Obviously. We can tell whose style of comedy this is.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'll leave out the commentary, even though I wrote it down.
What?
Ultimately, Annie calls a tween girl a cunt and promptly gets fired. And then the shame spiral continues. On her way home, she hears a voicemail from Rhodes, who hasn't heard back from her, and tells her it's obviously she doesn't want to spend time with him, so he's going to leave her alone and get your taillights fixed. And she goes home where Gail and Bryn decide they don't want to live with her anymore and kick her out of the apartment.
Mm.
With her tail between her legs, she goes to live with her mom. Outside of mom's house with a box full of belongings, Annie explains that she didn't hit rock bottom way back when her mom thought she did. This today is rock bottom. She also goes back to her storefront at some point, and instead of the missing A, there is an O, and somebody had wrote cock baby and spray painted a dick in her cartoon Annie's hand.
Yay. And also, yeah, the whole kicking her out thing was like, feeling anxious. Yes.
Oh, that was the one time I have to agree with you about feeling anxious, but I have been kicked out of places a time or two, and that feeling of not knowing where the fuck you're gonna go sucks ass.
Yeah. Fortunately, she has her mom's house that she can go to, but yeah, it was just like...
Well, we don't all have mom's houses to go to.
I know, and also, like, what the... just fucking creepy, but you know what, honestly? If I had to choose between living with Gail and Bryn and my parents, as much as I would prefer to live on my own in most circumstances, I would choose my parents.
And I do have to say this, because we cut out a lot of Gil and Bryn's parts because they weren't really relevant to the story, but they are very inappropriate with each other. There's a part where they're taking a bath naked together.
Yes.
Or wait, she's in underwear, I think. He's shaving her armpits when they're telling Annie that they want her to leave. Like, he's like stroking Bryn's like shin every once in a while. And I'm just like, what is happening?
Creepiest brother-sister relationship ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Annie just hit rock bottom.
Yes. Annie doesn't have much time to wallow in hitting rock bottom. She has to pick herself up in time to go to Lillian's bridal shower. It's at Helen's estate, and it is huge and lavish. She pulls up the long tree-lined drive and is handed a fresh glass of pink lemonade by an attendant who directs her to the stables, where she then gets on a horse to be led to the main house. There's Parisian.
Why don't they just drive up to the main house? You have to drive to the stables to ride a horse to the main house. That is bougie as fuck.
You know, parking's better at the stables. And also, what girl doesn't want to ride a horse? Come on!
Did you see her dress? Me, if I was wearing that dress short.
Oh my God, can you imagine, like, if you were wearing like a mini skirt or whatever and they're like, and now you're on a horse. You're like, no, I'm not fucking on a horse. What the hell?
No. Yeah. And my vertigo, if I can't even side settle, I will fucking slide off that shit and break an ankle.
Mm-hmm. There's Parisian music playing, a model Eiffel Tower in the middle of the backyard. And remember when she pitched little Parisian cookies they could dip in chocolate? Well, Helen one-upped her again. Right next to the Eiffel Tower is a huge cookie that says Lillian and Doug next to a literal cement fountain of chocolate. She sees Lillian and they have an awkward interaction. Lillian apologizes. Sorry I didn't call. Things got crazy. Annie understands. She didn't want to bug her, but asks, are we okay? Lillian assures her they are, but promptly leaves to greet her aunt. Next, we see the present opening portion of the party. Everyone is gathered to watch Lillian open gifts, which I find to be an incredibly awkward situation. I hate it when people are like, let's all watch X person open gifts. I'm sorry, I don't want everyone staring at me while I open my gifts, and I might have to feign delight at Aunt Edna's misguided smelly potpourri gift or something like that. Like, ew, no. And you know it, at those things, they're like, oh, and here's some lingerie. Isn't that funny and cute? And you're like, hi, Mom, look at me opening lingerie. Yay! Like, ew. No.
Where's your anxiety level, Corinne?
Not here. That's, I'm just like, for me, personally, I know it's a thing, but I hate doing performative gift opening on a personal level. And watching it is also kind of boring as well. And people make comments about the shit you get, like, they get. I remember going to a baby shower where I gave a gift and somebody made, like, a bitchy comment about the gift that I gave. So, you know, that was also great. Lillian opens Annie's gift, and it is a hand-decorated box with all their favorite things that they grew up with. It truly touches Lillian, and I don't know anything about binders decorated with tiger beat photos, but you do.
Oh, I said, picture the binders you decorated with all the tiger beat photos that you cut out of magazines. That's what this box looked like, because I would get those tiger beats and cut out all the handsome people and plaster them on my walls in a very poorly designed motif of hotness. And essentially that's what Annie did to this box, but it was all like culture club and 80s icons, and it looked like the cover of a Tiger Beat magazine.
Aww. It was really sweet, and it reminded me of things that we would make for each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we were super crafty.
I looked at that and I was like, yeah, I was like, that's something that Tam would do for me. I liked it. I thought it was a super thoughtful gift. And inside are things from all of Lillian's favorite stores in Milwaukee, which is also super sweet. She is truly touched and passes the box around for others to look at while thanking her bestie. But we're not surprised when Helen one-ups Annie. She hands Lillian a card apologizing. Because of the shower, I didn't have time to get you a proper gift. Lillian didn't expect anything from Helen because the party is so great. But when she peels open the envelope, her mouth falls open and she stammers. Oh my God, Helen, you're taking me to Paris? Helen giggles mischievously. Yeah, for a little pre-wedding vacay where we are going to do your dress fitting. Everyone oohs and ahs at the gift except for Annie. Oh. What's going on with Corinne's anxiety level? It's rising and
drink.
Swiftly. Weed.
Drink.
Annie loses her shit, literally blurting out, are you fucking kidding me? Her mom, who's seated close by, tries to calm her down, but she will not be calmed. I told Helen about Paris. This whole thing was my idea. Lillian implores her friend to calm down, but Annie is on a tear. What grown woman takes another to Paris? I know you're all thinking it, a lesbian. And I was like, I don't know. That's something that we might do for each other. But, you know, whatever.
Not after we've known each other for 8 months, apparently.
I'm like, if you ever decide to take me to Paris, Tam, I'm in. Just letting you know. Becca shakes her head emphatically. She wasn't thinking lesbian. Not at all remembering that kiss her and Rita shared. No, no. But Megan nods her head and mouths. Yeah, I was thinking it.
Yeah, Megan. Yeah, you were.
Annie shakes her fist up to the sky. Curse your son's inevitable betrayal. She then points at Lillian. You've changed. Before, Helen, if we went to a party like this, you'd roll your eyes at how over the top and ridiculous this all is. Pink bridal shower berets? I mean, really? Where are you going to wear that? And seriously, who's going to eat that giant cookie out by the horrible giant fountain of chocolate? She rushes outside to prove her point.
And goes all fucking destructo. Out on the back lawn, she topples the big cookie from the stand. She stabs the Eiffel Tower with the fork. She takes all the desserts off the dessert table and flings them into the chocolate fountain. Ugh. She also tries to topple that fountain, but it's stone and probably weighs hundreds of pounds. So she proceeds to rip up grass and throw it inside, and then tries to slosh the liquid chocolate out with her arms. And Lillian has had enough. She storms out and asks Annie, what the fuck is wrong with you? Annie tells her former bestie that ever since you got engaged, everything in my life has gone to shit. Lillian counters, every single wedding event that you've gone to, for me, has turned to shit. Annie blames Helen for all the craptastic things going on in her life and tells Lillian to get her perfectly coiffed head out of Helen's ass, which she is sure is perfectly bleached. Yes, Lillian roars. It is perfectly bleached. You know how I know? Because I went with her to the salon and I got my asshole bleached and I love my new bleached asshole. And why can't you just be happy for me and go home and talk shit behind my back like a normal person? Annie storms out and Lillian storms after her. An attendant at the door attempts to give Annie a parting favor, which is March is going to the dogs alert. Ding, 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 ding. A golden retriever puppy wearing a pink beret. I thought I would have to note that because it would be the first dog sighting that we've had in this show, but apparently I was very, very wrong. No, Lillian shouts. She does not get a party favor, and if you're going to act like this, Annie, you might as well not even come to my wedding. Annie looks at her momentarily as if she wants to say something, but instead leaves. Lillian stares at the empty spot where her old friend once stood, and Helen softly says, I'm really proud of you. And Lillian says, shut the fuck up, Helen. And then turns to the crowd and says sarcastically, is there anything else anyone else wants to share right now? Megan raises her hand slowly and admits, I took two puppies. They're in the back of my van right now. Oh, geez, that feels good. While driving home, Annie is attempting to wipe the chocolate off her arms when she hears a honking next to her. It's Megan. She's in her minivan, and it's chock full of party favors, a.k.a. pink beret-wearing retriever puppies. She waves and points at her haul and speeds away. When Annie looks back to the road, she sees a porcupine crossing the street and slams on her brakes. She still never got her brake lights fixed, so she gets rear-ended by a car behind her. And to add insult to injury, the car backs up and speeds away. It's a hit and run. She attempts to chase him down, but her car won't start, and she sits behind the wheel defeated. Guess who shows up with the tow truck? It's Officer Rhodes. He's not happy to see her and chastises her for not getting her taillights fixed. He tells her, do you know how frustrating it is to see you driving by me night after night without your taillights fixed? Annie can't rouse herself to care. She's had a day. Oh, I don't want to hear it. Lillian's mad at me. She freaked out at the bridal shower. But Rose also doesn't want to hear it. This accident has nothing to do with Lillian and everything you do with you not getting your brake lights fixed. Your problem is you don't realize how much you can hurt people. You flirted with me. You made me feel like you really liked me. And then we went to my place and we did stuff. Fun stuff. And then you left like it was nothing. Annie's not falling for it. She knows how guys are. She knows that they act like they care and then just leave. Officer Rhodes is about to say something else when Ted drives up in his Porsche and says, ugh. What's up, fuck buddy? Did you call for roadside assistance? Rhodes looks inside the car in disbelief and then back at Annie and huffs a, come on!
Annie argues that she didn't have anyone else to call. Her mom's still at the party, but he's done and walks off as Annie slowly gets in the car. And what starts off seeming like a nice favor quickly turns nasty when Ted offers to let Annie, quote, take a nap, ugh, quote, on his lap.
What a dog. Woof, woof.
He wiggles his eyebrows suggestively, and she finally realizes what a fucker he is. She tells him to pull over, and he starts to comment, oh yeah, good idea, better if we stop the car. But that's not what she means. She looks at him seriously and says, no, pull over, I want to get out. A second ago, pulling over seemed like a good idea to Ted because he thought he was getting a blowy, but now it's too gravelly and he doesn't want to damage his paint. Ugh. So Annie shrieks, pull this goddamn car over. I would rather be murdered out here than spend a half an hour with you.
Yeah.
He finally relents, lets her out of the car, and follows her for a few steps. But when it's clear that she is over him, he speeds off hollering, you are no longer my number three.
What a fucker. Ugh, that whole section that you read, including the tearing of stuff, it all breaks my heart. It's all terrible. The nice thing, though, there's a moment of hope in the very last part when Annie finally claims a little destiny and tells the first dog of the movie to fuck off.
Yeah, I wanted to stop in the middle of that and ask Corinne, anxiety level, usually you love the Rhodes interactions, but this one feels a little different.
No, I didn't have anxiety. I was just like heartbroken. Like the whole like her blowing up her friendship, being out of control, angry. I've had that moment personally, blowing up a friendship, being out of control, angry, you know, situations, whatever. And then like having her be horrible to Rhodes, like heartbroken once again. But two moments of hope. One, when fucking what's her name drives by with all the puppies in the car and waves at her. I was like, oh, she's not pissed at her. That's kind of nice. And when Annie finally tells the first dog of the movie to fuck the fuck off. Yes.
If I was Megan, I don't think I'd be pissed off at her. I'd be like, girl, I am glad I'm not you. Ooh, that was a shit show. Nobody got to eat that chocolate, but other than that, I was fishing those cookies out of that fountain. They were still good and chocolate covered now, so thank you for that.
What do you think of this whole section that you read?
I felt bad when the friendship fell apart. I was like, oh, and when I saw this the first time, I literally was like, oh my God, how are they going to rectify this? And how are they going to, like, get over it?
Yeah.
I was like, nope. If I was Lillian, I would be pissed. And if I was Annie, I would be mortified.
Yeah.
I don't think I have the same, like, if Rhodes approached me like that, I'd be like, I fucking like you, dude. I'm so sorry. Like, can we just give this another try? I was in a really bad place, but I know that she wasn't in the right mindset. And so I think I probably would have tried to reconcile with Rhodes in that moment in time, especially feeling like she didn't have a lot of people in her corner.
I think she might have tried doing that, except for that dog number one pulls up and calls her a booty call, and that kind of just destroys any sort of chance that you have at that.
Yeah, and I always wonder, too, I'm like, did he just get that that was her booty call because he called her fuck buddy? So, but I did extremely feel like it was a turning point when she was like, pull over, I'm getting the fuck out of this car. Yeah. I was like, oh, and this is where things turn around. Yes. Here it is. We are at the intersection and we are going right instead of left.
Oh, thank goodness. Corinne can breathe again.
Hold on for one more day, Corinne.
Things will come your way. When they start singing that song, I'm like, it's like she just wrote the script listening to the song.
Yeah.
Sometime later, Annie is at home watching Castaway. She's at the part where Tom Hanks has lost Wilson. Wilson! 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 His only friend, and it's ruining her. There's a knock on the door. It's Megan. She comes over with all her puppies and corrals them outside to give Annie a pep talk. She took 9 puppies total, by the way.
Because March is going to the dogs.
Because March is going to the dogs. Look at all those puppies. 9 of them. Damn. She's been calling Annie and not getting any response, so she's come by in person. Annie is feeling pretty sorry for herself and says, "What am I supposed to say? I lost my job, my apartment, my car is a piece of shit, and I don't have any friends." Megan is offended. "You have not returned a single one of my calls, and look who is sitting in front of you right now, a friend. And you're saying you don't have a friend when I'm here for you. Come on, Annie, stop the shit." Then Megan starts slapping and wrestling Annie, and suddenly her Fight Club wedding shower totally makes sense and even seems like an inspired idea when, after Annie finally slaps her back, Megan responds, "There you go. There's your fight. What's going on with you? The world isn't failing you. You're failing you. You stopped fighting and you need to fight." Megan shares, "So it's like fucking inspirational is really the Fight Club wedding shower. Huh? Huh? Are you rethinking this
whole
thing?"
I really appreciate you elaborating on that, because this was like hour 16 and I was like, I really want to go more into detail, but I just can't. My hand is cramping up.
I actually thought this scene was really sweet and weird, but sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're slap fighting each other until one Annie finally slaps her back. And then she's like, "Yeah, fight for your shitty life, Annie. Do it."
Yeah.
And she does. Little by little, she's clawing her way back to caring.
I know. I was
about
like,
herself.
Where, while I cut down the 3-paragraph airplane scene to like one very short paragraph, I extended this one out.
And that's fine. I am not mad at it. Because like I said, I was like, I just want this to be done. I just want this to be done. I'm almost at the end.
Rocking in the corner. I get it. I very much get it. Megan shares how hard she had it in high school. "My classmates would throw lit fireworks at my head. But did I have a pity party of one and hide away? No. I picked myself up over and over again, read every book in the library, and now I work for the government with the highest security clearance there is." Don't repeat that. "I own 6 houses and bought a big rig last month just because I could." Annie has been wrestled back into life and gives Megan a hug, and we get a montage of the Annie rehabilitation tour.
If Megan is such a baller and brags about all these things, why is she driving that shitty, shitty minivan?
Megan leads a secret life.
Okay. She has 6 houses and a big rig and a shitty, shitty minivan.
Well, you know,
and 9 puppies now.
And 9 puppies. You gotta have puppies for your 6 houses. If you, like, divide it out, it's less than 2 puppies a house. So, you know.
It's the American dream. Riding on fences and 2.5 puppies per house.
Just what we always wanted. Here at
yes,
ODK.
It is not picket fences and 2.5 kids. It is riding fences and 2.5 dogs per house.
We will provide everyone, if we are elected president, we will provide everyone with fence riding and 2.5 dogs.
And if you do not vote for us, we will slap you into submission until you realize that we are the shitty, shitty candidates you should fight for.
Yes. And now we get a montage of the Annie rehabilitation tour. She hugs her mom for no reason and tells her she loves her. She bakes an I am sorry cake for Officer Rhodes and leaves it at his door. She finally gets her taillights fixed. She's surprised to find out that Rhodes worked out a deal way back in the day, and she doesn't even have to pay for it. He covered it for her because he's so sweet. This prompts her to pass by his house, but to her dismay, he doesn't take the cake off the porch. He leaves it there, night after night, until it gets eaten by a pack of raccoons. And what kind of monster leaves a cake outside / doesn't eat it? I take back a few of the nice things I said about Rhodes.
You know he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that whole sugar addiction, and he just left that crack cake on his front stoop.
That freshly cut cocaine is just left for the raccoons to snort. And gosh darn it, raccoons on cocaine. Woo! Scary.
You've heard about cocaine bears. Now we have cocaine raccoons.
Oof. Next, we see Annie under a heap of covers. We don't blame her. It's Lillian's wedding day. Or at least I don't. I'd be under a heap of covers, too. And Mom comes in and asks Annie to come to the wedding. The one that she was rightfully uninvited from. Ovs Annie says, no, I'm sorry. Do you think that's a good idea? My friend who I blew everything up with by becoming a rage monster has uninvited me from her wedding, and I'm going to go with you as your date, Mom? I don't think so. You need to reconcile first. Just saying.
But the best time to reconcile is at a wedding. When the priest asks, does anyone have any objections? That's when you for sure raise your hand.
She won't notice when you walk up there in your bridesmaid dress.
Can you just have to push the other girl that she replaced you with out of the way nonchalantly.
Oh, that'll make things even better as she pushes Helen down the... A little later, there's a knock at Annie's front door. It's Helen. And Annie promptly tries to shut it in her face. I kind of don't blame her for that either, because Helen's been kind of awful. But Helen holds it open long enough to ask if she knows where Lillian is. Annie's baffled. They haven't spoken since the shower, but Annie knows exactly who can help. They drive together and Helen tries apologizing for all the shit she's done. Annie doesn't want to hear it, so Helen works the sympathy angle. Her husband doesn't talk to her. The only reason people ask her to help with weddings is because she's so good at throwing parties, and she doesn't actually have any female friends. She starts crying, which makes Annie smile. Fuck her. When Helen asks why, Annie snickers and says, it's the first time she's looked ugly. This is kind of cute. I didn't really appreciate the mean comment. But Annie says says to Helen that her crying is the first time. Helen crying is the first time that she's seen Helen look ugly, and it makes her happy, which makes Helen laugh. And Helen denies it. I don't look ugly, do I? She says,
"It's just my makeup. I don't look ugly."
And actually, she looks really good still. Darn you, Helen.
She was ugly crying.
Yes.
But even ugly crying, she still looked good.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Damn it.
Fucking Helen.
I know. I get overly emotional in any direction and my face contorts.
Tamara, I think that if you ended up with a friend like Helen, what we would do is we would let her throw you these extravagant parties and then we would talk shit about them later and just be like, that was ridiculous together. But I'm glad that you got all this really good food out of it and a cute puppy.
I know it's important in life.
By the way, pack me in your luggage when you go to Paris.
Got it. Yeah. I'll have to pay an extra $7,022 because it's going to exceed the 50 pound. Not that much. I'm sorry. I did not mean it to sound like that. It's just going to be an exorbitant.
I didn't.
Baggage fee because it's going to be over.
Gentle
50
listeners,
pounds.
She's implying that I'm fat, but guess what? I am fat. Oh my God. I was just thinking, I was like, you could get me a first class ticket at that price. What are you talking about?
But then Helen's going to know that you're coming.
Surprise!
You could do that dance. The one thing that I wanted to point out is when they were on that plane and Annie was drugged and she came back to check on Lillian and Helen, and she was so relaxed because she was drugged up. And she did that stupid little song that was like a vaudeville hymnal. I'm ready to party with the best friends, and we're gonna go down by the river. I was like, that was totally ad-libbed, and I was like, what the fuck is she trying to do? Oh, the improvising in this movie is epic, and that was probably one of the things.
Yeah, I meant to actually be like, to acknowledge, I cut this part super short. Tamara, do you have anything you'd like to add? That's what I meant to do, but I forgot to.
They finally pull up to Officer Rhodes, and Annie tells him she needs his help. He promptly rolls up his window and ignores her while reading his paper.
Aww.
They yell at him, but he doesn't budge. they need to resort to more drastic measures. So Annie drives recklessly, speeds, throws litter at his car, texts and talks on the phone while driving, drinks beer while passing him, blasts gangster rap music, drives topless.
Blasts gangster rap music. All she does is drive by playing fucking loud ass music. This was a missed opportunity to have her ghost ride the whip. Come on. That would have been epic.
She does do a Tokyo drift, though.
She does. Yes.
And finally, when none of that works, sheer wear ends him. This finally spurns him to flip his siren on, get out, and confront them. He tells Annie that all the stuff she just did would be dangerous for a good driver. She pleads with him to help her. They can't find Lillian. She's been gone for 12 hours. He argues that it's not a missing person until 24 hours. Have you not seen CSI? And I want to ask Officer Rhodes, have you not heard all the true crime podcasts that say the first 72 hours are the most important? Therefore, the first couple of hours when the person is probably still alive is the time that you should probably be looking for them. Ding, ding, ding. But he can't hear me.
Aww.
But he actually decides to help them anyways.
It's okay, Tamara. They couldn't hear me either.
I don't. I need to scream louder.
I know.
They track Lillian's cell phone, and it shows that she's on the corner of Kramer and Rose Street. It's Lillian's apartment. Annie asks Helen if she looked there. And she did. Last night. Rhodes is annoyed. Helen races off to the car while Annie apologizes for wasting his time. She tells him it's really nice to see him, and his face softens, and he says, I'm glad I got your tail lights fixed. She smiles until he adds, that means I won't ever have to stop you again. Now go off and save your friend from her apartment. She realizes that there's no chance left and heads off. They speed to Lillian's apartment, but when they get there, Annie asks to go up alone. Helen surprisingly agrees. Inside, Lillian's much like Annie was, hiding under a heap of blankets. Annie peels back her layers and Lillian begrudgingly sits up and tells her the wedding's all fucked up. Helen completely took over, my dad can't afford everything, and it's been really hard to do without you.
Aww.
Annie apologizes. It's my fault I got kicked out of your wedding. And Lillian cracks a smile and agrees. Wasn't it my turn to act crazy? You out-crazied me. But everything is going to change now. I left a rehearsal dinner last night and came here and realized this is going to be the last time I'm here. And I'm not going to live 5 minutes away from you anymore. And that makes me sad.
Aww.
Annie steals her resolve one last time and finally does her maid of honor duties and gives her a pep talk. She says, yes, things will change, but they'll get better. And I'm going to be fine. So it's your job to forge the path and report back to me. So you get on your dress and let's get you married.
Yeah.
Lillian seems to feel better until the very last statement. Oh, yeah, the dress, she grumbles. And next we see Lillian donning her designer Juju dress, which is hideous and makes her look like the abominable Snow Bride. Oh. There are layers upon layers upon layers. She commands Annie not to laugh, but she can't help it, and cackles, which causes Lillian to join in. After they finish laughing their asses off, Annie assures her friend that they can fix it. You will not walk down that aisle until you look perfect. Lillian looks dubious and asks, why, do you have a chainsaw and a blowtorch?
And you would need that to fix that hideous dress. Cut to Lillian's wedding. Her and Doug are standing in the middle of a pool of water in front of a waterfall. Very understated. The wedding party flanks either side of them, and Annie is there, and so is the zhuzhed dress, which still looks bad, but not as bad. The vows are said, and a laser light show shoots across the water, and fireworks go off behind the newlyweds. Totally classy. Totally classy.
No. Hello, the 80s call. They want their wedding back.
Oof. They kiss, the crowd goes wild, and Helen has one last surprise. She announces that she got Lillian's favorite band here to sing her favorite song, Wilson Phillips, with Hold On! Because Annie and Lillian had their song, Hold On, just like you and I have our Bengals song, Eternal Flame.
Yeah, so if somebody like said, I've got the Bengals here to sing Corinne's favorite song, Eternal Flame, I would push Helen into the water. I'd be like, bitch, no, that's our song. No. Oh, I'm sorry. You were holding a microphone. Now you're dead. Well, you deserved it.
Huh. But hey, the Bengals are here. Corinne, let's sing Eternal Flame together. Yeah. So Annie gives her the stink eye. She's more understated than you. Maybe she learned her lesson from her Godzilla-like triumph at the wedding shower. Wedding shower. There were so many parties, I don't even know. They kiss.
Yeah, no, parties upon parties upon parties.
Oof. So Annie gives Helen the stink eye, and Helen whispers guiltily, "That's the last one," as the trio starts. "I know this pain. Ooh, why do you lock yourself up in these chains?" Much like Annie has locked herself up in her own chains.
Oh.
I know. I know. Lillian's dad is sitting in front and center and mutters, "I am not paying for this shit, and we do not blame him." Bridesmaid Megan is busting a move, and she points at her date, who is Air Marshal John, who she met on the ill-fated flight to Vegas. Thank you, Tamara, for filling in a little more of that story there. And
he has a cluster of puppies in his lap. March is going to the dogs.
Very Lady and the Tramp of them. Hey!
Oh, there's another one.
There's another
Added
one.
To the list.
Yes. Air Marshal John has a cluster of puppies in his lap and points back at her seductively. The ceremony ends with Annie and Lillian singing, "Hold on for one more day and things will go your way," to each other while playing air drums while the rest of the attendees dance along. The wedding is over. Lillian and Doug have driven off. As the crowd thins out, Helen finds Annie and asks what she thought of the wedding. She lies and said it was nice. They are finally making peace. Annie extends an olive branch. "Maybe sometime the three of us can go to Rockin' Sushi Nights together." Helen would love that, and gathers Annie in for a hug, then whispers, "Your ride is here." When they break apart, Annie sees Officer Rhodes. And I'm so excited to finally get an Officer Rhodes section in front of his police car, but dressed in civilian clothes. He asks how the wedding was, and she admits it was good. He tells her he ate her cake. He had to fight a few raccoons for it, but it's okay because he's big and strong. His voice trails off before he says, "Oh, heck, I'm just going to kiss you now." And they kiss, and it's a good one. His police radio clicks on, and he's paged. He says, "Shoot, I'm still on duty. I better change or else they're going to think I stole the car. You want to come with me?" She does, but when she makes her way towards the front seat, he instructs her to get in the back. She hesitates, but does it. And as he gets in, he lets her know that she is actually under arrest for reckless driving, texting, operating a vehicle while drinking alcohol. "You didn't think I'd let you get away with that, did you?" She doesn't care. She's just glad she got a second chance and asks from the back seat, "Can we at least turn on the siren?" And he does, and she's thrilled as they drive off. Last shots are now taken blooper reel, which includes Megan's sex tape with Air Marshal John and a sandwich. The end, motherfuckers.
It's foreplay with cold cuts and it is uncomfortable.
So, Miss Tamara, thank you for taking us on this journey. It was a roller coaster ride of emotions. What do you give Bridesmaid?
I'm giving it a 5 because it is one of my most favorite movies. When I first saw it, I laughed out loud. I was uncomfortable. I was surprised. I was delighted that it was an all-female cast and they were hilarious. I knew that they did a lot of improvisations and they were wonderful at it. I felt like they had a good amount of diversity of all kinds. It definitely passed the Bechdel test because they don't always talk about guys because
yes.
They're besties. And although there are a lot of guys in their orbit, it's mostly about them. And this movie, does it raise Corinne's anxiety level?
Mm-hmm.
I still love it. It's still a 5 for me, and I will probably always love it unless, I don't know, Kristen Wiig and never mind. I'm just going to say I'm always going to love it. Corinne, what do you give it?
First off, I would like to say, Tamara, I love that you picked this movie. I love that you gave it
no,
5 stars. No, I do. It was a movie that you delight in, and so I'm super glad that you picked it. That having been said, I give this movie 1 dry kiss. I cannot with this movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've 5 dry kisses.
Yes.
5 dry kisses.
Yeah. So I love that you gave it 5 dry kisses. I give it 1 dry kiss because I saw it once and I was like, I'm never watching this movie again. It just makes me anxious throughout the entire thing. I don't think it's funny at all. Like, I don't think the ad-libbing is funny. I don't think that yeah, it's not a funny movie for me. There's a certain type of comedy that you really delight in that I don't find to be funny at all. And so, like, this is one of those examples. And and so, you know, it's just, that's just the way it is. And this just caused me a lot of anxiety. So, yeah, One Dry Kiss, hated the movie, will not watch again. Super happy to do it for Tam.
And that is the end of our show. We are never recording ever again. Thank you for listening and good night.
No! No! I mean, I loved the movie. Five Dry Kisses. Absolutely. It was great.
I'm not trying to sway you to the Five Dry Kiss side. I'm just like, we are so different in our preferences. Oh my goodness. It all makes sense now why I struggled after month 7 with Hallmark movies. I'm like, these are fine. I'm just not, they're not resonating with me as much as they are with you, and I can't understand why. Oh, that's right. We're different people.
What? Wait. We're different. Fuck. Damn it. Why? Yeah. Why?
This is not me. This is not your reflection you're looking at in the mirror. Nope.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to have to take some time with that. And what I'd really like to know, Tamara, is what movie are we doing next week?
I think we're doing an even more lighthearted, delightful, not at all anxiety-inducing movie called As Good As It Gets.
Yeah! And this one was actually suggested to us from our friends at...
That Aged Well.
Yes! So if you have any thoughts about Bridesmaids, One Dry Kiss, Five Dry Kisses, anywhere in between, As Good As It Gets, or any other March Is Going to the Dogs movie or anything else, you can feel free to email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Woohoo.
Oh, why don't we just go ahead and tell everybody how you recorded me snoring? Did we talk about that on the last episode?
I don't think so. Oh my gosh.
Did we talk about that where you recorded me? I was sleeping and you're like, I kept having a bad dream about people singing off key and I couldn't figure out why until I went to the bathroom or something and came back and you were doing this and you turned on your phone and it was me going, I was like, am I humming in my sleep? You're like, no, that's how you were snoring.
Yeah, you were like magically, melodically snoring. I don't know how you did it, but it was a work of art. Oh, I've never heard anything like it.
In my defense, I was coming off a cold.
Absolutely.
The congestion probably like compressed my nasal pathways so that they were like extra melodic. I don't know.
I didn't record you to be like, look, oh, no. Loser, no, you know, no, no, nothing no. like that. No, no it
okay.
Was, it was just exceptional. It was an exceptional moment in time.
I wasn't embarrassed by it because I'd rather be like, all quaint and cute. Sort of.
That's me, gentle listeners. But back to the story.